이렇게 더 시험 발사 성공.
Welcome to Window on North Korea, an attempt to humanize and three-dimensionalize our image of everyday North Koreans with the help of defectors from North Korea now living elsewhere and sometimes from sources still living within North Korea. I am Paran Kelleher, your host. This week, and possibly for the next few, we will deviate a little from our usual mission of exploring everyday lives of North Koreans into the subject of this year's Winter Olympics, which are being hosted in South Korea at the Pyeongchang Ski Resort, about 40 miles from the border with North Korea. The participation of North Korean athletes has only been agreed upon in the last month, so there is much hurried preparation going on to accommodate the 22 athletes and the literally hundreds of cheerleaders and arts performers accompanying them. The decision to have North and South Korean athletes march into the opening ceremonies under a unified flag and for the North and South Korean women's hockey teams to combine into a unified team has generated many questions by outsiders and some controversy within South Korea, at least. North Koreans are well aware of the Olympics as well, though their access to information is carefully restricted by the government. Their state media, in fact, has been downplaying the fact that the Olympics are being held in South Korea, but information is finding its way in, and there is much curiosity about the games and what the athletes will find there. More on that in a bit. I've been asked whether a new unified Korean flag design is in the works, but actually such a flag has existed since 1990 and was first used in international competition in 1991 in the World Table Tennis Championship and also in youth soccer championships. The unified flag has also been used in the Olympics before, in Australia in the year 2000, in Athens in 2004, and in Italy in 2006. The teams entered the opening ceremonies together with the unified flag, but maintained separate teams in the competitions. The flag itself is the outline of the Korean Peninsula up to the border with China in a bright blue against a pure white background. There's no lettering or other graphic. It is called the Hanpandogi, meaning literally one peninsula flag, or also known as the Tongilgi, the unification flag. It is very simple, but striking to those who are familiar with the Korean Peninsula's shape and its history as an undivided country for the millennia preceding its post-World War II division. The unified flag was also used in 2007 by both North and South Koreans when then-President No Mu-hyun of South Korea crossed the DMZ into North Korea to visit North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. The unified flag was also used in 2007 by both North and South Koreans when then-President No Mu-hyun of South Korea crossed the DMZ into North Korea to visit Kim Jong-il. It was the second of only two meetings ever to happen between two heads of state of the Koreas. The flag was again used in 2010 and 2012 when South Koreans returned home from unauthorized visits to the North. Both unauthorized visitors were promptly arrested by the South Korean government. As for the merged women's hockey team, a little history of the respective North and South teams might help explain the current controversy about this attempt at peacemaking and relationship building between the countries. North Korea has had a women's hockey team since 1999. It was ranked by the International Ice Hockey Federation the first year they established rankings in 2003. At that time, North Korea ranked 13th of 26 teams. South Korea's women's team joined the federation in 2004 and ranked 27th of 28, while North Korea dropped from 13th to 15th that year. North Korea's ranking dropped steadily while South Korea's improved somewhat, and by 2011, the South had surpassed the North in its ranking, and now they presently rank 22nd of 38 teams for the South and 25th for the North. The North and South Korean women's hockey teams faced each other almost a year ago at the Hockey Federation's championships, also played in South Korea. The federation is divided into several divisions, and both Korean teams competed in Group A of the second division, so in the fourth level of five. The teams squared off against each other, and the South did prevail, 3-0. In the final standings, South Korea was first in their division of six teams, with a record of 5 wins and no losses, and will advance to the next division this year. North Korea ranked fourth in that group, with a record of 2 wins and 3 losses. But the interesting story of that championship last year was the attendance. Again, this division's championships were hosted in South Korea, in Gangneung. All of the games in which either Korean team played had an attendance of over 1,000 spectators. Games without Korean teams had significantly fewer spectators, well under 1,000. The final championship game, which pitted South Korea against the Netherlands, had 2,482 in attendance. But the game with the most attendance was the North Koreans versus the South Koreans, with more than twice as many as the championship game, 5,800. Unlike this year's Olympics, there would have been very few North Korean spectators in Gangneung at that time. Clearly, the interest of the South Koreans in the team of their neighbors to the north was high, and it wasn't because they thought it was going to be a particularly close game. These Hockey Federation games are used to qualify for the Olympics, and neither Korean team would have qualified this year if the games weren't being hosted by South Korea. But the host country has a right to enter a team, so South Korea got an automatic in. The teams are limited to 23 players, so after the decision was made to make a joint team of the North and South Korean hockey teams, there was a lot of objection on the part of South Koreans, because 12 North Koreans would be joining the South Korean team, meaning 12 South Korean members, many of whom had been training for this opportunity for years, would be bumped from the team. Last I heard, however, the Olympic governing body decided, in the interests of the unique peacemaking and relationship-building spirit of this unified team, that they would allow the team to expand to accommodate the North Koreans so that no members would be dropped. Nonetheless, only so many players will get a chance to be on the ice, and the Canadian coach of the unified team, Sarah Murray, is hoping not to be pressured to play the North Koreans only for the sake of appearances, but rather to be able to play the best players, whether South or North. She said that no one will be guaranteed ice time. The coach needs a translator to communicate with her team, a situation further complicated by the fact that a language barrier has emerged between the two Korean-speaking teams since they began practicing together less than 2 weeks before the start of the Olympics. In the 60-plus years of separation of the North and South populations, differences have evolved in the language beyond the pre-existing regional dialects. Furthermore, words used for much of the equipment and sport terminology are completely different. Hockey didn't exist in North Korea until the Russians introduced it in the North in the early 1950s. It didn't come to South Korea until sometime after that. As it developed in the South, words were adopted from English for the sports terminology, but the North Koreans have stubbornly refused to use foreign words and instead created their own Korean-based words for maneuvers, equipment, and other terms. Speaking of equipment, sanctions imposed on North Korea by the international community since their missile and nuclear bomb testing have made it difficult for North Korea to obtain equipment, which must be imported since there is little market for it in North Korea. Nonetheless, the sport is slowly gaining in popularity, though it still trails behind soccer and basketball. There are only 3 or 4 ice rinks in North Korea and a dozen or so regional teams, besides the national teams, so it obviously hasn't become a major participatory sport in the North. Getting back in closing to the impact on everyday North Koreans of the Olympics, it has reportedly become a hot topic of conversation at markets around the country. As mentioned earlier, the state media, such as the Rodong Shinmun, have avoided mention of South Korea as the host of the Games, but people know it and are taking it as an indication of just how rich the country must be, contrary to what they've been told all their lives. There is a feeling of envy of the athletes and others going to the Games. A source in North Korea for a story in the dailynk.com said, quote, "I have heard people sounding envious, talking about whether or not the South will look like it does in the TV dramas, and that we'll be able to find out from the people that are going now," end quote. They also see both positive and negative potential outcomes for the North Korean athletes having the opportunity to compete. In the past, these athletes are under incredible pressure to perform and bring back medals for their country. Those who fail have actually faced punishing consequences. But another source in North Korea, quoting from the same Daily NK article again, said, quote, "Public opinion is turning towards the belief that the athletes may not be rebuked for failing to win medals as they have been in the past. Kim Jong-un is now looking more at the person than the mistake," she said. "The eyes of the world are on him now, so it doesn't look like there will be any big punishment for athletes who do not bring home Olympic medals," end quote. Well, we certainly hope not. Tune in again in the next couple of weeks as we track the performance of the North Korean athletes at the 2018 Winter Olympics and any reactions we might be able to learn about from the North Korean public. Sources for today's episode include dailynk.com, nknews.org, the Korea Times, koreatimes.co.kr, and the Telegraph from the UK, telegraph.co.uk. You are listening to Window on North Korea, brought to you from the studios of KTWH in Two Harbors, Minnesota.